Fantasy Edge with Jonathan Chan, Kevin Kuo, Richard Seville.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Fantasy Edge. My name is Jonathan Chan. I'm joined, as always, by Richard Seville. This week, Kevin is off, so just be the two of us with our week four wrap-up and week five preview. Richard, how are you?
I'm feeling pretty good. Didn't do so great in fantasy yesterday. I think only one guy on my F6P team scored a touchdown. One guy, and that was a guy, not one of my regular starters at all. I put in Austin Hooper, and
he was the one that got a touchdown.
He scored a touchdown from Baker Mayfield, yeah. So
that, if I'm not mistaken, Austin Hooper was your Jonnu Smith replacement, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and also, I had to sit out Jared Cook as well, because he was out.
Yeah. So. Well, at least you didn't start Brandon Cooks and Marvin Jones, who combined for one catch and 9 yards. That was not good on my end. Oh, boy.
Oh, so your fantasy weekend didn't go too good either, huh?
I mean, if Valdez, Scantling, and Julio combine for fewer than 10 points, then I'll still beat AJ. That's a thing.
Oh, wow.
Could happen.
Well, he only had, I think, 68 points. But anyway.
No, last week he had 68.
Let's not bore everybody with our problems.
Anyways, let's get into the news. All right, Richard, do you want to start with what dominated the headlines this past week with all the positive COVID tests? I just want to go to what happened during week four here. It's like all the injuries and whatnot.
Let's get this COVID thing out of the way first.
All right, so as everybody knows, there was a lot going on in the news this week with Cam Newton testing positive, in addition to more of the Titans testing positive for COVID-19. I think they're up to 19 players and staff now. So the Tennessee-Pittsburgh game was moved to week 7, and the Patriots-Chiefs game was moved to tonight, and it's going on as we're recording this. There's been a lot of talk about, you know, canceling a week and letting everybody reset, or just making everybody play as scheduled. Richard, what are your feelings on what the NFL as a league should do before, I guess, we move on to how fantasy commissioners can kind of handle all the change?
Well, they've got to make it a little bit more clear about what they're going to do about the COVID from here on in. Because they actually, when I look at the schedule for this Tennessee and Pittsburgh game, they were actually lucky that it worked out the way it did. Because if they couldn't have moved Baltimore, if it wasn't possible to move Baltimore, like if they were past a bye week or something like that, they might have not have been able to get out of it. I think they've got to loosen the rules just a little bit. I think they're getting a little bit too tight about it. But I understand the urgency and that, but I understand the fact that you want to keep the public safe, and public safety always must be first in mind, but these are young players. They're not mingling with the older population or a player with a pre-existing condition. You even saw the president of the United States. He's 74 and he's hardly shows any real symptoms of the disease. Like, it's not really, it doesn't really
that
harm
we know
people
of.
That we know of. But what I'm saying is that, you know, I think that's the case for a lot of people, though, who do get it. And I've noticed, and it's not just notable figures that in the, you know, in of celebrity that are showing, you know, little serious condition. But yeah, it's mostly people who are, so these are young players, and I think there's a chance that they can play through. And I think it should be based on symptom rather than just having it, maybe. I mean, they got to loosen it just a little bit. Otherwise, you're going to have a week where nothing's going to happen. I don't know how you feel about this, but I mean, it should be taken seriously. Don't get me wrong. And, you know, mask up and do all the stuff. But panicking. I don't know if they were panicking. That's a hard way to, that's putting a hard thing on them. But I just don't think they're, I think it's easy to run away with this, like a cool head prevails. Don't put everything into a, don't put everything into a box and just say one rule for everything, you know. Look at each case individually is kind of the way I'm thinking about it.
Yeah, I'm on the other end of that. I think because the rosters are so large and because there's so many different people interacting, not just the players, but coaches, stadium staff, you know, equipment people, people at the hotels, airline, you know, transport, everything. There's so many people interacting with everybody around the team that if, you know, what's been happening, if somebody tests positive or whether symptomatic or asymptomatic, you can't go as normal. And you definitely shouldn't play, like the players, regardless of the symptomatic, they shouldn't play through it. There's so many people around that they become super spreaders to everybody around them if they're asymptomatic and they keep going. Look at the Titans. They've been following protocols and what, 20, 19 people have caught it. And, you know, these coaches aren't exactly young. Most of them are, you know, 50-ish. So, you know, it's not just young, able-bodied players. And it's, like you said, the interest of public safety is the number one priority here. And,
absolutely,
you know, these players shouldn't be playing through something that they can spread to their families. You know, I don't know about what the NFL is doing in terms of, are home teams allowed to go home? Are they, you know, sequestered to a hotel when they're playing home games? But I'm assuming they're seeing their families. And that's, you know, if there's any chance that they could be spreading to their families, they shouldn't be playing around with that at all. So any positive symptom needs to be bubbled. And honestly, the NFL's, unless this whatever top secret plan that they've been touting for a while actually comes up with something, they look horribly unprepared for a situation similar to the Titans and Steelers, where they're just praying that bye weeks kind of line up. So
yeah, that's right. Yeah, exactly. I don't think they were at all prepared for it at all.
Anyways, I guess the fantasy side of this is a lot of commissioners have come out and said that they're like what Joe did in our F6P league is if you have, you know, a possible postponed game going on like the Titans or like the Patriots and Chiefs, that you can leave that player in your lineup, designate a backup, and then that player, you'd get that player's points if the game is postponed, you know, post lineups locking. What are your feelings on commissioners doing that for the rest of the season?
I think it's a good thing, but it's a hell of a lot of hard work if you're a commissioner of two or three leagues. Like I think Joe is. I think
yes, Joe, he definitely is.
And I think that should be a lot of work for him to keep track. And I think you're pretty much bound to be on an honor system. You could get arguments. You probably will get arguments, but I think it's fair, and I think it's a good thing to do if you have the patience to do it.
Yeah.
The idea is to keep the league going as best you can. The main thing is that a commissioner has to inform the league or tell their people that of what they're doing. It depends if you can. I've been in a lot of leagues where guys just, you know, they draft and then you don't hear from them again, sort of thing. And they, you know, they're, I don't know if you've been in leagues like that. Most of the time people will, you can't get a hold of them if they're, you know, especially early in the season before, you know, when they're out of the money, it might be, you know, if they're out of the money by the middle of the season, they might be a little harder to contact. They might not care.
I see a lot of pushback about this on Twitter, is people saying that, oh, the postponed games are similar to, you know, Monday night questionable tags, but it's completely different, where with injuries and things like that, like, for example, Devontae Adams and Calvin Ridley and Julio Jones for this week, you can follow their, you know, their progress in practice, you can see reports, you can, you know, get feelings from them and the coaches, but with testing, you don't know anything until it happens, and that's not something you can prepare for, per se. So it's a different situation, and I'm all for commissioners having that backup and, you know, letting the league be a little flexible in where, you know, half a day's slate can get canceled because of a positive test. So,
speaking of Ridley and Julio, I haven't been up on the news. What's their status for...
They're both in.
They're both in. Okay.
They're both active.
Okay, good.
Unfortunately for me. But, all right, now that we're on to injuries, let's go on. Week 4, another couple running backs went down with serious injury. We'll start with Austin Eckler. He suffered a hamstring strain, I believe grade 2 hamstring strain. So he's going to be placed on injured reserve and he'll be out 4 to 6 weeks. Joshua Kelly has been the main backup so far. But Richard, what are your feelings on Justin Jackson moving forward?
Well, he also, he obviously moves into the regular lineup of things. I think Kelly has to be kind of a little bit more of the pass catching guy. And whereas, I think they just basically, move into the roles of the guys who, of the guy who's not there. So Kelly becomes Eckler in effect and Justin Jackson becomes Kelly. So I think that's basically how they'll roll it. But you just never know with these things. It could go hot hand. And Justin Jackson's not a bad running back. And so I think you got to own Jackson, obviously, because of that. But on the whole, I do think it becomes Kelly's backfield for the next several games.
Yeah, like you mentioned, Justin Jackson, not a bad player. Over his two-plus years now, this is his third year, he's averaging 4.8 yards a carry. And I guess in a scrambled game plan this past week, Kelly had 57% of the snaps, while Jackson played on 40% of the snaps. So it's not a big of a disparity as people might think getting started. So I think, like you said,
that could
change, might split the work a little bit. It maybe becomes a 60-40, 55-45 kind of thing. I don't think Kelly takes it over outright unless he really, really shows something next week. Although he hasn't been playing badly. Don't get me wrong.
But. Yeah, I wouldn't keep. Have they got anybody else that's kind of a scat back in their backfield? I'm not sure.
I don't believe anybody experienced is back there.
Right.
But I think it's mostly going to be Kelly and Jackson.
Right.
A little bit of a hit for Justin Herbert, who's been playing super well, but he can throw it deep again.
Who do they mix in on RPOs with, like, the receivers? Does Keenan Allen, does he do any of that stuff?
I know Keenan Allen has been doing nothing but catching.
Yeah.
I think Herbert had him on 39% of the targets or something insane like that over the last couple of weeks, so... Keenan was getting plenty of targets.
No, but you know what I mean. Like what Alan Lazard was doing like before. Oh, he was another guy that...
Lazard's out as well.
Yeah.
But that's... Trying to predict Packers receivers beyond Davante Adams is futile. And it has been for years. Anyways, next running back to get hurt, Nick Chubb. He was placed on IR as well with an MCL injury. He'll miss the next 6 weeks, as reported by Adam Schefter earlier today. Well, the return of bel cal Kareem Hunt is upon us, and boy did he look good playing on limited snaps on Sunday. 11 carries, 71 yards, two touchdowns, or 77 yards, excuse me, two touchdowns. People were a little bit worried about his carries. He only had 11, but he was limited with a groin injury all through practice, and he's got to be a top five running back the next 6 weeks, considering how run heavy the Browns have been, don't you think?
Well, they were in effect 1A and 1B, so now obviously, you know, Kareem Hunt becomes the 1AAA. And I know probably going to be talking about the other backup there, and he's definitely worth a pickup, but I really think that the backup, we're going to be talking about D'Ernest Johnson, right?
Yes.
And I don't think, you know how we were talking about Eckler and Justin Jackson, Joshua Kelly and Justin Jackson. I think that's the split divide is a lot wider.
Oh, yes. Kareem Hunt is getting 80% of these touches easily.
Yeah.
The only reason Johnson got 13 carries this week was because Hunt was, you know, nursing a little bit of an injury, so they didn't want to overdo it.
Yeah, so he'll play a really fault. He's got to be picked up, though, just to
say. Yes, he does need to be added.
Yeah.
I don't think the Browns will completely go away from the run, or they'll try to maintain what they can with the run, just because I don't think they want to put the ball in the hands of Baker as much as they did last season. He's been pretty good this year. But they've limited his opportunities. Yesterday, they had Jarvis Landry throw a touchdown to Odell Beckham, and then handed it off to Odell Beckham for another touchdown. So they're getting creative, trying to mix it up and not putting too much on Baker at the moment.
Right. Yeah. They.
Go ahead.
No, I was just saying that was fantastic play. The Jarvis Landry pass. You just let loose and just let that thing fly, and it was just like, wow, this is gonna work. Yeah. And it did.
Absolutely pinpoint. All right, let's move on to a season-ending injury this time. Bucks tight end O.J. Howard tore his Achilles, so he'll be out for the remainder of the season. Just another injury for Tampa Bay's receiving core. Didn't hurt Tom Brady, though. He still threw five touchdowns on Sunday. But
is
with
it Gronk
Howard
season?
Hurt, is it really Gronk season? He only had one target, and it was late in yesterday's game.
I don't know. I don't know.
It's Scotty Miller time.
He's a little guy. Well, no, actually,
I think
littler.
Evans still played through his ankle injury. Godwin should be back this week with his hamstring issue, so he'll have most of his weapons back. And another guy that we'll talk about during our waiver section. But I don't think you can trust Gronk until he actually shows.
No, you can't trust Gronk. You can trust Brate, maybe. Brate is streamable, but would I stream Gronk? It just didn't seem Gronk's just like there is like, just wallflower.
He's a blocker.
He's blocked. He's just there.
He's still an elite blocker, which is awesome. But I don't think he's got the legs under him to receive anymore.
Yeah. Just, he's there for moral support, Brady, when Brady has a bad game.
Brady will never have a bad game again. He threw a pick six in this game, but it was not a bad game.
Did you see how, there was a bit of schadenfreude, as they say, when Brady threw that pick six and Justin Herbert's, jumping around, smiling on the other side?
Nah, I mean, a lot of people were making fun of Brady after the pick six, saying he was washed, and, it's like Jameis never left, and... You know, then he threw five straight touchdowns, whatever. You know, that's just Tom Brady things.
Yeah.
All right. Back to the Patriots' new quarterback. In case you haven't heard, we talked about a little bit at the start of the show. Cam Newton tested positive for the coronavirus and is week to week based on his symptoms and testing negative at some point. What does this do to the Patriots' skill players? Obviously, Julian Edelman and N'Keal Harry get a bit of a downgrade, but... Yeah. With Brian Hoyer early in this game, they're going run early and often. Does it really help anybody, though, now that Damian Harris is back in there and it's a three-man backfield once again, four-man even, when Sony Michel... Oh, no, he's on IR, so 3 weeks. Sony Michel on IR, by the way, but out at least 3 weeks. I don't think anybody's going to be too upset about that one, realistically.
No.
But again, three-man backfield, Harris, Burkhead, and James White, who's back, and J.J. Taylor, who's looking pretty good. Again, Richard, there's no one you can choose in this backfield, but if you had to pick one to start at flex, who's the guy?
I guess it's really hard to say. But first of all, wow, on this Cam Newton news, it looked like for all the money that Cam Newton was going to be really making the Patriots look a little bit exciting. Like after Brady left, it kind of uplifts the hearts of the Patriots fans. Like, oh, good, this isn't too bad. Things are going okay, even though Brady's gone. Well, there's a bit of sadness, because to see Brady go, and then Cam Newton comes in. Oh, we can live with this, and then this happens and forth. But as to your question about the backfield, man, it is so tough because we saw what Burkhead did last week, and. I don't know how the running game is going so far in this game. I think you've been able to take a peek in this game. Is it more?
Yep, I have it up on the TV now. It's been all Damian Harris. There's been 8 running back carries. Harris has 6 for 25 yards. Burkhead has 1, and Isaiah Zuber has 1 for 8 yards as well. White has 1 reception for 13 yards. So right now, it's looking like Harris is going to be the guy.
Yeah, so he's obviously the guy you need to own. But
with 11:50 left in the second quarter, it looks like Harris is going to be the guy. So you never know how they'll end up, in the beginning of the third. But right now, it looks like Harris is going to be the guy.
Okay. You really can't. I think it's really as you were with the Patriots backfield. You cannot start anybody with any real true confidence.
Yeah. On to another AFC East quarterback, Sam Darnold, AC joint sprain in his shoulder. He's going to miss week 5. Joe Flacco comes in. Now, the Jets were unstartable with Darnold. Is there any reason to start Jamison Crowder this week? He's the only startable Jet now. Do you still play him with Flacco out there?
No, you can't. This is actually made a bad situation going from bad to worse. And, well, we saw what Flacco, what kind of quarterback Flacco was like with the Broncos and, of course, with the Ravens. And it's, I don't like to say game manager. Kevin would kill me if I call Flacco a game manager quarterback, but.
Oh, I can play the role of Kevin here. Joe Flacco is elite. That's a Super Bowl winning quarterback. Elite Joe Flacco. There we go. Kevin's
there. There. Thanks. but he would kill you if I called him a game manager. I did that once and he jumped on me. But it is what it is. I mean, like, there's really no trust.
Career, following all the injuries, game manager might be an adept. Yeah, descriptor.
But he's not going to get out there, and I think they're going to have to rely on the running game if possible. I don't know when Lev Bell ever gets back, and it's really, really, it was so bad that Thursday night game. I mean, I only saw the ending of it because I thought, well, should I check into the game? Should I not? Should I watch? Should I do? Well, I better check in just in case there's something interesting to look at, and there wasn't. So, I hate to say this is a who cares injury because every injury matters, and I wish the best for Sam Darnold and everything and all that stuff. But for fantasy, it's really an unimportant injury. I guess it has a little bit of importance for people for the pass catchers. Like, I know Braxton Berrios is emerging, but how can he emerge with somebody like, you know, Joe Flacco? I don't really see it. And
Braxton Berrios put up a nice big goose egg on Thursday, so. And I was with Darnold playing.
Oh, well, so there you are. And Chris Herndon, yeah, didn't do much either. it was a bad game. Well, but their defense,
sticking with
actually,
that Thursday night game, we have Broncos tight end Noah Fant, most likely going to miss week 5 with an ankle injury. The Broncos are already missing Philip Lindsay, Cortland Sutton, now Noah Fant. I guess Jerry Jeudy is the undisputed number one now. And Tim Patrick asserted himself on Thursday. Well, we can talk about him now. But with KJ Hamler out as well with a hamstring injury, same injury he missed week 1 with. Where do you put Jerry Jeudy now in your weekly rankings?
I really don't. I still put him low, like WR 4 or 5, only because Brett Rippon is the quarterback. I mean, look at, they're down. It's the quarterback. You got to factor in the quarterback here.
He's not afraid to throw it, though. I'll give him that.
No, he's not afraid to throw it. Not afraid to throw it. But I think you kind of got to wait for Drew Locke to get back for him to rise, for him to be a safe start again. I think you got to stash him until Drew Locke gets back, until there's a little bit more stability.
And of course, this means big, big, big things for Melvin Gordon. Gonna get a ton of carries now moving forward, even more so than he was.
Yeah. No, there's always a good side to it, and that's probably one of them.
Yeah. All right, and I guess the most recent news, not really fantasy related per se, but could have some, could make some ripples. Bill O'Brien was fired by the Texans after an 0-4 start. Texans have really disappointed over the last few years with Deshaun Watson. Not Deshaun's fault, but they're going to make some changes. Romeo Crennel coming in as the head coach.
Yeah.
Do you see the Texans offense getting any better? Just in terms of Deshaun Watson scoring, you know, Will Fuller, Brandon Cooks put up a big zero, David Johnson, or is the defensively oriented Crennel going to slow things down a little bit?
Yeah, I was just going to mention that, is that Romeo Crennel is more of the defensive coach. He's been defensive coordinator. So this is more on the defense. I think what it does, though, I think it kind of loosens up the, playbook, and it might, I can't even remember, I know, Romeo Crennel, used to coach for the Chiefs, and, that reminds me, do you remember that? Crennel, he saw one of his players commit suicide in the parking lot or something like that.
I don't remember that, but that's absolutely awful.
I know, it's terrible, but that was, I think it was the same year he was fired from the Chiefs. But anyway, look that up. It's quite a shocking story, that is. Forget the name of the player. But anyway, but he's a defensive-minded coach, and so, like, for the life of me, I cannot think of how he styled the Chiefs' offense. I can't even remember back. I think this was 2012 that he was head coach. So I don't know.
He was
know.
Head coach for the Browns, right? He was only...
Yes, the Browns. The I think the Browns before the Chiefs, right? But
yes.
And this is going back quite a ways. And it's beyond my memory of what it was like. Because this is nearly like 10 years ago, right? So I think it might loosen up the offense a little bit, maybe. I think there might be a... a willingness to try things. They might get a little bit experimental, which is good. Sometimes you see that with interim coaches. We're 0-4. We could be 0-5. I'm likely not gonna get fired. I'm gonna be here until. I'm not sure if Romeo Crennel is the kind of guy that says, "Well, I've got to do really good so that I can get the interview." You know,
The Texans have nothing to lose. They have to play to win. They don't have a first round pick. They don't have a second round pick. Those both belong to the Dolphins.
Yeah.
So the move they made, this is what the Texans believe is going to help them win, and they will do anything they can to not. You know, give the Dolphins. Will they take Trevor Lawrence? I don't think they will. Obviously, with Tua there, but that's a lot of draft capital they've given. They gave Miami.
Yeah, they did, and there was a Laremy Tunsil thing.
Yeah, that's how they got those picks, I believe. Yeah. If I'm not mistaken, but
that's
yeah.
right. That's how they got.
Not
that,
great. Maybe Crennel can help out Brandon Cooks a little bit. No catches on 3 targets this week, I believe. Just can't really happen for. They gave up a first rounder or a second rounder to take on his Albatross contract.
I cannot remember.
I think it was a second. Anyways, they gave up a high pick to the Rams to take that contract, and they're just not using him, or he's washed. But either way, that's not good. And hopefully Crennel can fix that.
They will experiment. I think the Texans will start to experiment with the offense now a little bit more. They might even try to do some of the things that. That the Ravens are doing with and get to don't because I think one thing O'Brien was doing was keeping Watson in the pocket and not getting him to run. I think Watson if he starts using the wheels, I think that's what they would try to do. I know he had the knee injury like in his rookie season, but I think he's well past that now. I think he could, start putting the wheels on. I think there'll be some interesting experimenting going on with the Texans.
Yeah, we'll just have to wait and see. Like you said, it's been a while since Crennel's been a coach, so we just have to wait and kind of see how the scheme shapes up.
Yep.
Anyways, let's move on to our observations segment for this week. Much talked about your observation, much talked about offense struggling a little bit, especially against the Lions. What did you notice this week, Richard?
What I noticed this week, and it's actually been sort of brewing ever since the season began, is how much of a factor Hopkins is having on the Cardinals' offense. It's too imposing for the rest of the players. Like I was looking at this afternoon, I took some time to take a look at what Larry Fitzgerald's been doing. Now, Larry Fitzgerald's sort of kind of a set piece in there. He's just playing out the string. And I think that was kind of like the same thing sort of last year. But last season, he was getting like 6 or 7 targets a game. This season, he's getting like 3 or 4 targets a game. His involvement in the offense is sort of like Hopkins is so imposing on this offense that, and obviously Hopkins has a way of getting open, and it just goes to show you the skill level Hopkins has for him to impose himself so much on an offense that it actually harms his teammates for fantasy purposes. I mean, even the running backs we were talking about, like no catches for Drake.
No targets for Drake.
No targets for Drake. And so Hopkins, this is a bit of a problem. They got to sort of, the Cardinals have to expand this offense a little bit more, make it a little more diverse. It's too Hopkins-centered at the moment. And I think it might be causing them, this is one of the reasons it's causing them to start losing, is because...
Yeah, you were mentioning just DeAndre Hopkins being imposing. Just among the Cardinals wide receivers, you know, Hopkins, Fitzgerald, Andy Isabella, Christian Kirk, and Keyshawn Johnson. Over the first 4 weeks, Hopkins has had, going back from week 4 to week 1, 45% of the targets, 46% of the targets, 41% of the targets, and 62% of the wide receiver targets over those 4 weeks.
Yeah.
There's not a ton of balance going on, like you're saying, and maybe they got predictable, especially, you know, he had 9 targets this week coming off a week where he didn't practice, and the offense did not look good. Kyler Murray didn't look good. They lost to the Lions, which is never ideal.
No. Well,
the Panthers, not the Lions.
The Panthers. Well, the Panthers.
Again, not ideal. And I don't know, maybe they need to expand things. Andy Isabella looks like somebody that can stretch the field, you know, make some big plays. He had a season high snap count 42%, but only had three targets. I don't know. Like you said, it's a weird thing. They might need to involve the running backs a little bit more. Kenyon Drake has five targets total on the season after averaging 4.5 last year with the Cardinals. So not really sure what the game plan is and why they would change it so drastically in the new season. But hey, what do I know? I'm not an NFL coach.
Just to add to this a little bit is that I don't think there's a... I really don't know what the cure is, because Hopkins is like, he's... Kyler Murray's going to throw it to the open man, right? And if Hopkins is always the open man, I mean, what do you do? I mean, you can't just leave him out there. It's the reason it's Hopkins' talent that is doing it. And
of course,
he needs what Hopkins needs is somebody like Will Fuller. Will Fuller is a little step up from the other guys on the Cardinals. Like, if I was to say, who would you rather own, Christian Kirk, Will Fuller? Who would you rather own, Will Fuller or any, you know, the answer is simple, right?
Yeah.
They need somebody that raises, that's a little bit closer to Hopkins' skill level. And I think that's what they have to do. Now, obviously, it can't be done this year. I mean, Larry's too old. Hey,
Antonio Brown is eligible to play in 4 weeks.
They wanted him on the team. But you know what I'm talking about, right? To get that balance, I think they need a receiver of that level.
A deep guy.
Yeah.
Isabella, he's a big yards after catch guy from what I've seen, but not somebody that you can just, you know, run a go route and go up and get it like Will Fuller, like you said.
But he's hurting the other fantasy prospects, for sure.
Yes. Speaking of hurting fantasy prospects, I guess my thing from this week is the Colts' commitment to spreading the backfield touches. Obviously, Jonathan Taylor is just a rookie. Maybe they're trying to ease him in, but didn't quite make sense to me there. Granted, I didn't watch the game, but just the distribution of the backfield touches. Jonathan Taylor had 17 carries, averaged 4 yards a carry, had about 60-ish yards. Sorry, my math is bad, but he averaged 4 yards a carry on 17 carries. And then Nyheim Hines and Jordan Wilkins combined for 18 carries, and Wilkins averaged under 2 yards a carry. Hines averaged two and a half yards a carry. And I don't know if, again, they're trying to ease Taylor in or, you know, something happened, but I feel like not giving your best running back, your rookie running back, the touches and giving Jordan Wilkins 8 carries, who, you know, he turned it into 15 yards or something like that. It doesn't make sense. And it's, I guess, a game against a low scoring, you know, slow paced game against the Bears. You want to spread out the touches, but I don't know. I don't know what they're really doing with Taylor, unless they want to scale back the touches so he doesn't get hurt, but it's a weird thing. And unless, they kind of establish him as the guy, you know, 20 touches a game, it's going to be a weird that he's not really an RB1 for fantasy purposes, because you can't trust that he's going to get, you know, the consistent 20 plus carries and goal line stuff that you'd expect from a second round running back.
I don't know if it was game script or whatever it was. The Bears game was sort of weird. I mean, it was very defensive. Now, this is one thing too, is the Colts are now officially the number one defense in the NFL. And yep. But usually that means that when you have the strong defense, it kind of goes hand in hand with a strong running game. But you're right. It does seem a little bit odd that they didn't rely fully on Jonathan Taylor. They tried to mix. Maybe there was a matchup problem that that Reich was a little bit concerned about. It's kind of hard to say. And to see Wilkins, and Wilkins was actually put in there a lot in the previous week as well. And Hines is suddenly nowhere. I mean, like, it looked like the Colts were doing all the right things in week one. Now Hines is almost practically, I mean, if you got him stashed, he might be just droppable at this point.
I don't know if I'd say droppable. Hines did have a good number of touches this week. I think he had 8 carries and a few catches. Let me double check on that.
Wasn't heavy.
He had 8 carries and 3 catches. So, I mean, you're not rostering him as an RB1, but 11 touches isn't bad for a game that was as slow paced as this one.
Yeah, I think with this game we can sort of when the Colts start, I think the interesting thing will be was when the Colts start playing more offensive teams in the league. I don't know who's their next big offense, and I have to look it up actually to see who their...
The Colts have Cleveland next week.
That
could be nice considering they just dropped 49 on the Cowboys, but
They're a good test case, maybe, Jono.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Nah, we'll have to see. Again, like I think Kevin mentioned this last week, Jonathan Taylor hasn't exceeded expectations. He's taking what the Colts O-line is giving him, and he's not really pushing it further. But that might be why they're not using him to the fullest. But again, that's something that is going to have to develop over the rest of the year, and we'll watch and see how that one goes. Mm. All right, let's move on to our next segment here. Moving on up. There's only going to be two of us this week, so we can hit some extra players this week. Richard, who you got?
Moving on up, obviously, is... not obviously, but he's certainly entitled to be moving on up because he did the job, and that's Justin Herbert. If you aren't happy with your current quarterback, I think you can take Justin Herbert for a spin. He's not going to have great weeks every week, but if he keeps growing at this rate, he's growing because he seems to definitely looks like he's enjoying being out there. He enjoys throwing the ball. And he was actually, you could tell he was testing that arm on just tossing it down the field. Hey, look what I can do, old man. Look, you can't. Because yeah, he sailed a beautiful pass.
Those bombs, 52 yards, 73 yards, Jalen Guyton and Tyrone Johnson, exactly who we thought he was going to be throwing to at the start of the year.
Do you think he was showing off to Brady, like the old man, like, look, you can't do this anymore, I bet.
I mean, he did, though.
Yeah, he did. Like, Brady says, okay, kid.
Brady, to quote Michael Jordan, Brady said, and I took that personally, and then he showed up the kid, but... I agree, though. Justin Herbert looks good. He looks the part of a starting quarterback. He passes the eye test.
Yep.
And Anthony Lynn still refuses to, commit to Herbert for the rest of the year, which is insane to me. I feel like
I
going back to Tyrod after this is bordering on a fireable offense.
That would be fireable. Nah, they're not taking him out. No. Because Tyrod Taylor was never going to be the Tyler. Why do I keep saying that? Tyrod Taylor.
Oh, Tyrod. Yes, excuse me. I forgot about that. That's last year's thing.
Why do I keep saying it? But anyway, Tyrod, they're not going to bring him back. Why? 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 It wouldn't make sense. He was a bridge quarter to begin with. He was the bridge to Justin Herbert. Well, across the bridge. Sure, it was a bad accident, but with the doctors and the puncture. You don't. They got things going. I mean, they lost the game, but.
That's exactly why Lynn is saying that, he said, what was it? I can't say that anybody played outstanding because we lost. He just refuses to, praise Herbert for a good game. It's just such a weird thing for a coach to do. I understand, the win mentality, it's all about winning the NFL, but damn, give your quarterback some praise. He, kept them in it, or, he went touchdown for touchdown with, Tom Brady and a much better Bucs offense. And it's just a weird thing not to do, not even to say that he had a good game,
Yeah. I just don't think it was. Yeah, you got to pump up your play. Do you know how many teams? Do you think the Bears would want Justin Herbert? You bet. They would start Justin Herbert in a second. The Bears.
The Bears would want Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes too, but they made their bed.
They made their bed. Yeah, they traded up for Trubisky, and that's who they got. And Trubisky, who's he using the same class as Watson?
Mahomes and Watson.
Yeah, Mahomes and Watson.
Those are the two.
Yeah.
But, just even without hindsight, that was a bad move at the time. Anyways, we'll move on to mine. We'll stick actually with, we're talking about the Colts a lot. I'm going with Zach Pascal, or is it Pascal? Either way.
Pascal, I think.
Zach Pascal.
The announcer said Pascal, so I'll go with that.
All right, I'll stick with Pascal. The Colts passing game is looking kind of out of sync. Rivers doesn't really have a go-to guy yet, but it could be Pascal moving forward. T.Y. Hilton not doing great. It's possible that the hamstring injuries and all the little things over the years have slowed him down. He's not playing very well this year. I think, Richard, you wrote the yardage down here. He's got 53, 28, 52, and 29 yards in each of the weeks so far. No touchdowns. He hasn't had over 87 yards since Andrew Luck retired. So that's Yikes. 2 years. He's gone without surpassing 87 yards in a game, which, yeah, that's not good. And Pascal this week led the Colts in targets, 58 yards on 8 targets, 3 catches against the Bears, which not bad against a good defense. And again, this week he's got Cleveland, who almost blew a 27-point lead to the Cowboys. So
oh, dear.
We'll see how that game goes. I think if you know, he builds, if Pascal builds that relationship with Rivers, I think he could be the new, I guess, most targeted guy, especially with Pittman and Paris Campbell out for extended periods of time.
Yeah, this is kind of ties into what we were saying, is that we're kind of waiting for the Colts to get into an offensive shootout, to get into a game where they have to, where they kind of have to get out this defensive mode a little bit and get into opening up the offense. I think it's probably where a guy like Hines will come into it and other people. But Zach Pascal, nearly said it. He's a guy that certainly has taken the reins, and he's got to take the reins because T.Y. Hilton, Rivers obviously isn't interested in him. And I noticed that even too when Paris Campbell got injured in his first game, like after week one, Paris Campbell looked like, I think that was the guy who I would bet you any money that was the guy that Philip Rivers was looking for in training camp. And he was thinking, Philip Rivers was thinking, yeah, this is my money guy, this Paris Campbell. But then he gets injured, so Rivers is kind of he's kind of like a boat without oars now. He's, well, one of the oars. He's got to sort of make things up, and he's still not happy with Tilton. But I guess it's going to have to be Pascal. But he's taking a while for it to emerge. For Pascal to emerge. We had Pittman, and then he got injured too. So I don't know what's going to happen now. I don't even know who's the third. I don't have a depth chart up. I should have these ready. I was a bit late getting to the podcast, ladies and gentlemen. So
yep. So Pascal had 8. Hilton had 5. Trey Burton had 5. Tight end Allie Cox had 2. Jack Doyle had 1, and then a couple other wide receivers. We had Darius Fountain and Marcus Johnson. So yeah, Pascal has a ton of targets available to him if he can step up and build that relationship with Rivers for sure.
He's got to do it.
Yep. Okay. Let's go. What do we got here? Oh, panic button. Everybody's favorite. I had the reverse jinx last week, so let's hope it works again. Richard, you can start though.
It's got to be DJ Moore. DJ Moore. The problem with Moore, and I've put him into the slot. Like he had just this week 6 targets, 4 receptions, 49 yards. He still can't find the end zone with Bridgewater. Bridgewater had a good game, by the way. He ran it in for a touchdown, which, I mean, if for fantasy, we always look at it from the fantasy point of view. I guess from a fantasy point of view, Bridgewater ran it in for a touchdown. It's always nice. It was a good touchdown, too. It was where he looked. He's got a bit of wheels going there. But the problem is that the offense of the Panthers cannot support 2 high-grade receivers. And Robbie Anderson, I consider him kind of in that range of good wide receivers, like not just a guy type of receiver. And he's kind of eaten into Moore's. And this offense, the way it's structured, cannot support 2, unlike the Cardinals, what we were talking about, the Cardinals. The Panthers are a little bit lower on the scale of what they can support. Whereas the Cardinals can support a second great wide receiver, whereas the structure and the scheme, so to speak, of the Panthers just cannot support DJ Moore and Robbie Anderson. Therefore, Robbie Anderson is holding down DJ Moore, because you're going to have weeks where Robbie Anderson does well, and it's pushing. If you drafted DJ Moore high, I feel bad for you because now DJ Moore is starting to sink down into low WR2 territory. Slowly, slowly, he's for where you drafted him. You gotta hope you're actually living on hope right now that things change, but I don't see it changing in the very near future. Not with Robbie Anderson there.
Yeah, Moore's in a tough position. I mean, if you break down the Panthers' receiving numbers, Robbie Anderson, DJ Moore are always in top 3 in targets, receptions, receiving yards, and receiving touchdowns. But
yeah,
the third. I guess person or third thing in those top 3s in those categories is the running backs, whether it be Christian McCaffrey or Mike Davis,
right.
Like the running backs or Reggie Bonifon. The running backs have 33 targets, more than DJ Moore combined. The running backs have 30 receptions, which leads the team combined. You know, it's a lot of passing to McCaffrey and Mike Davis, and if they're siphoning so many targets, it's tough for Moore to get going, who's, you know, not not a big air yards guy, if I'm not mistaken. He's more of an after catch underneath guy.
Yeah.
And he only has 18 receptions this year, which is not great. 18 receptions on 32 targets for somebody like DJ Moore is not great. Maybe it just takes time for Bridgewater to get to him. And with Moore at the moment, you can't really trade him for much. I don't think people are going to be giving you the value that you'd kind of need if you're going to trade him. So yeah, owners are in a bit of a bad position with Moore, and I'd be panicking a little bit considering how much, like you said, Bridgewater seems to be liking Robbie Anderson.
Yeah, because he's the Robbie Anderson playmaker. You could tell right away. I mean, DJ Moore, workhorse, right? And that's the thing is, workhorses are good for fantasy if they get the work. And so, but he's not getting enough work. I mean, six targets, yeah, that's great. You know, it's not bad, but for the position he plays and the type of, but it doesn't cut very well. That's, and another guy to mention too is Curtis Samuel. He gets in there. He gets his two or three every game, and so it doesn't help. But I don't know. But you're right about the running backs are very key for receiving in the offense. So yeah, I just can't support both. So I'm really kind of worried about DJ Moore. He's a panic button for me.
For sure. And speaking of, it's a good segue there. Receiving running backs. My panic this week is Kenyon Drake. We talked about this on the Fantasy Six Pack Hour with Joe and AJ on Thursday. We discussed Kenyon Drake as a decent buy low. Despite his low fantasy point outputs, over the first 3 weeks, he was averaging just under 20 touches per game. And we discussed the possibility that, you know, Kyler Murray running in from 1 yard out every time wasn't really sustainable. Obviously Cam Newton and Josh Allen do it, but they're significantly larger people than Kyler Murray. So eventually those goal line touches and, would normalize and the targets would normalize a little bit to the point where I believe Derrick Henry is averaging more targets a game than Kenyon Drake, which is criminal in a way.
That's terrible. That is bad. And also James Robinson too. And James Robinson, not known as a pass catching back, they worked him in as a pass catching back.
Yeah. It's a weird thing. Like in his time with the Cardinals last year, Drake averaged 4.4 yards a carry. Now he's averaging 1.2. Had no targets this week, and just to add insult or injury to all this insult, he left late in the game with what was called a chest injury. Cliff Kingsbury's come out and said that it's fine. He just had the wind knocked out of him. He's already practicing in full, so nothing to worry about there. But what's really concerning is Chase Edmonds, who was thought to be nothing more than a backup, is actually getting a lot of the targets people thought were going to be going to Drake. Over the first 4 weeks, he's got 5, 4, 2, and 6. He had 6 targets on Sunday. So not really sure how this is going to continue breaking down, considering how inefficient Drake has been with his touches. And he didn't have as many carries. He only had 13 carries on Sunday. His lowest of the season for just 35 yards in what should have been a good spot against the Panthers. So it's tough to say. Keep in mind, listeners, I had Joe Mixon in my panic button last week, so I reverse jinxed him where he came out and just absolutely exploded. So I'm hoping I do the same thing for Kenyon Drake because he gets the Jets this week in week 5. So if he's not breaking out against the Jets, then there are going to be some problems for somebody that was a mid-ish second round pick in drafts.
The worst part about it is that though the Jets are a little bit. The Jets are actually pretty good defense. I think the Jets scored more fantasy points wise. It's always good to talk in fantasy points because it's a good way of measuring a defense. But scored more fantasy points than the Broncos, if you can believe it.
No, Ripon just tossing it down the field with reckless abandon.
Yeah,
it's not gonna work out well most of the time.
No, but there definitely is a problem up front with the line. There's not a lot of holes opening up for Kenyon Drake. I own him in the Scott Fishbowl.
Same.
Yeah, I'm kind of worried about it. And he's definitely panicked. I'm really panicking about having him. And like you say, the possibility, the ever-present Chase Edmonds starting to move in on the territory a little bit more and more, especially if the Cardinals don't start winning. But again, this kind of goes back to the Hopkins thing I talked about earlier too. And so that could be part of the problem. Maybe is the imposition of Hopkins. So, but I certainly hope not. If things turn around, hopefully, like you say, if it's reverse, jinxing or whatever it is.
Yeah. Hopefully the reverse jinx works. And just like Joe Mixon did, Kenyon Drake's going to explode for, 40 fantasy points or something this past week in half PPR. It's a good week. And hopefully Drake can bust out of this soon, because the Cardinals offense does not look good without a viable running game.
No.
Well, I guess speaking of Joe Mixon, let's move on to everybody's favorite segment.
Gotta be unlimited.
That's right.
I guess, Richard, I guess we take, we know who your nominee for Mr. Unlimited is this week.
Yeah, it's going to be John. It's got to be Joe Mixon because, well, last week he was on the panic button. And it wasn't just you, John. We all agreed with it. We all talked about it. Yeah, Joe Mixon. So what does he do? He thought, well, I'm going to show those guys on the fantasy edge. So I'm going to show them. And he did.
If Joe Mixon listened to our show,
He can do whatever he wants. If he listens to our show, then that's fine. I think he should be our Mr. Unlimited as a kind of apology in a way for saying that he was in real trouble for owners. And I just don't think. I think he's still in the start sit column. Okay, he's not a, like, an every week starter. I think Joe Mixon is going to be matchup based, and I think he's a start sit column running back still. But he was Mr. Unlimited for me this week. He was my candidate. I wasn't supposed to nominate. Kevin was supposed to nominate, and I was supposed to pick. But I think Kevin would have chose Joe Mixon.
And in keeping with the spirit, the Bengals actually won their game this week. First of the year, first career win for Joe Burrow. So nice for him.
Yeah.
So we're only allowed to nominate people that won. I was going to nominate Dak, but the comeback didn't materialize quite as well as I would hope. But honorable mention to Dak for throwing 500 yards and still losing.
The Cowboys. But, you know, that's funny you mentioned the Cowboys, is that a meme came out, and I think that they said, it was basically this, if you didn't know the Cowboys changed coaches, would you still think Garrett was the coach of the Cowboys?
Did the Cowboys score this consistently with Garrett? I feel like Garrett's teams were just boring and had really nothing. McCarthy's worked the offense very well.
Oh, no, I had...
The defense is just awful.
I think that's where their problems stem, but just basically they're still not winning games they should, which is what was happening with Garrett.
Yeah. I feel like if Garrett had this version of the defense, then he would have been fired a lot sooner, because that was brutal.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. Yeah, especially letting Odell Beckham run down the sidelines like that. That just didn't happen. To close out the game. I mean, they made a, and that looks bad on the Browns too, because the Browns actually let the Cowboys get back into the game quite, a little bit easy. So, but that's another story. The Browns are the Browns. The Browns have their own issues going on, but they look pretty good. They look pretty good. Baker's
turned. We'll see how things go without Nick Chubb this coming week. Their bread and butter has been, just feeding the two running backs, but Hunt can't take all of Nick Chubb's carries. So we'll have to figure out how they divide it. But
anyway, so finish your thought.
Yep. My Mr. Unlimited is got to be a winner for this week, and I'm going to go with Brady. People are writing him off all of this week. He was on so many, sit lists with the Chargers defense, and turned back the clock, threw 369 yards, 5 touchdowns, and a comeback win. And, and this is without Chris Godwin, with Mike Evans hobbled, with O.J. Howard tearing his Achilles, with a broken shell of Gronk. He's throwing it to Scotty Miller. So I'm giving him the homer pick here. Tom Brady showing us why he is the greatest quarterback of all time. And it was also just a fun game to watch with Herbert and Brady going at it. So yeah, going with Brady for my nominee this week.
All right. So now we got to hash it out. Well, I can lean towards Brady a little bit, and he made it an exciting game, and it was a great contrast between young gunslinger versus the old. And I don't know if Brady was ever kind of like gunslinger in the sense of the other guys who we considered gunslingers, like the of his era, like Philip Rivers or Jay Cutler, for example.
Not like a not like a Rivers, Cutler, Brett Favre kind of gunslinger, but late 2000s, obviously the 2007 team, Brady was throwing, and then I guess his, I don't know, his gunslinging abilities and all that kind of stuff kind of went under the radar, I guess, as it were, as much as it can for somebody with as many accomplishments as him because of the defenses that he played with. But
yeah, but it was more of a gunslinger in his earlier years, I guess, in his earlier career. Kind
of
like,
of course. But I'll let you make the final call here since I picked last week.
Well, I don't think you disagree with Joe Mixon being Unlimited.
Joe Mixon, well, he was the second highest fantasy scorer this week behind Dak, but Dak didn't win his game, so he's disqualified from this.
Yeah, so I think we kind of owe it to Joe Mixon to give it to him because of our because we kind of downgraded him last week and actually the Cincinnati offense and Joe Burrow's really fitting into the role quite nicely. So
he is.
So here he is, Mr. Unlimited Joe Mixon.
Perfect. And shockingly, this is the first Mr. Unlimited where Russell Wilson himself was not a nominee because he didn't have that great of a game.
Oh, Russell, they won, but
any game where Russ is not throwing for, 350 yards and four touchdowns this season, it seems a little off. I don't know.
Russell scoring 20 fantasy points. Oh, that's a bad game.
Only 20. Only 21. Well, he went 31, 34, 36 over the first 3 weeks.
Yeah,
he got the Dolphins. So we all figured this was going to be, another 35 point game. But
no, I didn't. I think there's a lot of truth in this West Coast to East Coast travel. Body clock stuff.
Hey, he was outscored by Fitzpatrick. We'll say Fitzpatrick did outscore him for fantasy purposes.
Yeah. So I kind of expected the Seahawks to be a little bit flat because they always, because of that body clock thing. I know a lot of people don't believe that, but I think there's something to it.
Yeah. Traveling across the country, it's got to be tough for them for sure.
So they get the Vikings next at home, so they should be okay.
All right. Let's move on to our waiver wire section. Of course, you have until Wednesday morning to make your picks. Richard, who do you got as a, I guess QBs, there weren't many this week. We already talked about Justin Herbert, Teddy Bridgewater. Anybody else you can think of for a waiver wire QB?
I put Kirk Cousins on our list and kind of lukewarm on him, but I think as a spot start next week against Russell Wilson, I think Kirk Cousins, because he's going to have to keep up with Russell because they're going to be playing at CenturyLink. So Kirk Cousins, I think Kirk Cousins is a good guy to pick up and start if you need a good quarterback next week. So I consider Kirk Cousins like a good streamer.
Yeah, I'll agree with you there. Yes, Cousins is a pretty much as good of a streamer as it comes. Seattle's, I guess, they're giving up a ton of fantasy points to quarterbacks to this point. So with Cousins and, the Vikings defense is not good. So he's going to have to throw a ton as well. So volume grid play there.
Yeah.
Moving on to the running backs, I guess we talked about, the Browns and running heavy. So I guess a pickup this week we alluded to him earlier would be D'Ernest Johnson. He had 13 carries this week, racked up 93 yards, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Played very well. Again, take it with a bit of a grain of salt. It was the Cowboys, and for the most part, Johnson was running with the lead. Sorry, 13 carries, 95 yards, excuse me. But yeah, running with a lead. Again, Hunt is going to be taking the majority of these backfield touches, but Johnson could work his way into, spelling Kareem Hunt, 10, 12 touches, depending on game script. Is he a must-add for you, Richard?
He's a must-add, but as for must-start, I don't know about that. But he is a must-stash. Get it?
Yes.
See what I did there? He's a mustache.
I like that.
So I'll put the mustache on him. D'Ernest Johnson, you definitely got to have him because he's the backup too. And especially if you own Chubb, you should try and get him because he might fill the role. But whether you start him in the flex, things that make you go, I'm not sure it is. It's a quantity. I don't know if you can start him, but he's definitely a guy you got to have. He's definitely somebody you need to have on your bench. He's a more wait and see, but in desperation, I think you can start him if you're desperate.
Yeah, for sure. Now, everybody keep in mind that the Browns do have the Colts, who, as we mentioned earlier, have the league's number one defense so far. So let's temper expectations. We don't expect another 95 yards from from D'Ernest Johnson for sure. Wide receivers didn't do too badly this week in terms of guys, you know, owned under 35% of Yahoo leagues. I had Tim Patrick. We mentioned him again a little bit earlier with the injury to Noah Fant, but 20
fantasy points.
Yeah, 113 yards and a touchdown, you know, six catches, led the team in targets, and he has a touchdown two straight games. Now, this passing game is basically just Patrick and Jerry Jeudy, and the way Brett Rypien is throwing it, so somebody's gonna come down with a ton of you know, air yards and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, Patrick, at least for the next couple of weeks while Fant is on the sidelines, good if you're desperate for a wide receiver, or you have Kenny Golladay, Marvin Jones, any Lions on a bye, then that's a good option. Tim Patrick as a bye week fill-in.
He's a safe, he's a good bye week fill-in, and actually a safe flex even without a bye week problem. When do the byes week? The byes start after week five, right?
Nope, they start next week. Marvin, the Lions, and I think the Packers might be on a bye next week.
That's right. Yes, that's right. Yeah, week five. That's right. So yeah, the first two. Yeah, that's right. It goes two to start. Yes.
Yep. So if you have Davante Adams, if you have Marquez Valdez-Scantling, if you had Alan Lazard, Kenny Golladay, Marvin Jones, Tim Patrick would be a fine bi-week fill-in for those guys.
Yep, I like it.
Any receivers you got, Richard?
Not really. I mean, we talked about Scotty Miller, but Tre'Quan Smith, he's another guy I think you, if you have room on your bench, and again, similar to Patrick, scored two touchdowns on Sunday, getting open, and I think he's the guy. I know a lot of people were looking at Deontay Harris, but it's got to be Tre'Quan Smith while Michael Thomas is out. And I don't know where he is. I don't know why. But if Michael Thomas is still out, you got to have Tre'Quan Smith while Michael Thomas is out. I don't know the latest news. I kind of half expected him to be back this week. I mean, but if Michael Thomas isn't playing, you can start Tre'Quan Smith. He's proved it in the flex.
Yeah, I mean, Michael Thomas, it seems like he's on the cusp of returning, and it seems like he's going to be, seems like he'll be, at least in a limited capacity anyways, back next week. But with the Saints, I believe they have a bye coming up after in week six, so they might choose to keep him out to ensure nothing happens with the high ankle sprain for another couple of weeks.
Yeah.
So that's something everybody's got to watch out for. Yes, they have a week six bye, so...
But you notice
they might choose to keep Thomas out one more week, get him 2 weeks of rest for the price of one game. So Tre'Quan Smith, definitely somebody you should pick up, because he is very clearly ahead of Emmanuel Sanders. Sanders just looks old and not quite up with the system yet.
Nope.
And Jared Cook is hobbled. He's got, what, groin injury?
I think so. Yeah.
Cook is hobbled. So missed this week, didn't practice at all. So it's not, if he comes back, I don't think he'll be 100%. So Tre'Quan Smith is going to be the, main wide receiver anyways. Alvin Kamara is the main actual receiver.
But that's what you notice is like, and this kind of ties into my thoughts about the Cardinals, is that Michael Thomas, but the Saints have kind of got their offense a little bit right in the balance, like, because when Michael Thomas is in there, there's no other wide receiver you can take, really. So the Cardinals are similar to that. The Saints are similar to the Cardinals in that respect.
Okay, let's move on to tight ends. There wasn't a ton this week. I guess one that I will mention that, again, we mentioned off the top with the O.J. Howard injury is Cameron Brate.
Yep.
Cameron Brate, for his Bucs career, all he's done is catch touchdowns because he's not a great blocker. So he's a red zone weapon. And it happened again on Sunday. One target, one catch, 3 yards, and a touchdown. And as, you know, Howard gets hurt and Godwin's hurt and Evans is hurt now, and Gronk has proven himself to still be an elite blocker, I think you're going to see a lot more Brate, especially in the red zone. I wouldn't expect a ton of targets because you can't. Unless Bruce Arians is going to choose to split him out wide or in the slot, kind of like a Mike Gesicki, Evan Engram kind of weapon, I don't see Brate in on a ton of snaps because he's, not a good blocker when he's used inline. So, but in the red zone, for sure, I think Brate's going to be a good weapon. Just, he might be a little inconsistent, but if you need a dart throw or a streamer for a touchdown, then yeah, Brate is a pretty solid flyer for this week.
Yeah. And my pick would be Robert Tonyan, but that kind of depends on what he does tonight. But all because right. of what he did the previous night. But
well, that finishes off the waiver wire. Everybody's got their running backs, receivers, tight ends, QBs. Not so much this week. Cousins, if you need a streamer, or Herbert, if you need a guy there as well.
Yeah, pretty thin. Pretty thin this week.
Sorry?
A little bit. a bit thin on the waivers this week a little bit.
Yeah, because the running back injuries, their backups were already owned. So it's nothing really to scramble like when Saquon or McCaffrey got hurt.
Yeah.
Let's move on to drops. This one's always fun. Richard, who you got this week?
Well, I'm going to have to drop Greg Ward. If you picked him up thinking that he was the... you know, because Philadelphia is so thin at wide receiver that they're going to need somebody. Nope. It seems like Carson Wentz is saying, nope, I'm just going to go to Zach Ertz and Richard Rodgers. I'm going to go to my tight ends and throw the ball a lot to Miles Sanders. And that's how I'm going to run the offense. So you can't try. Although there was this one guy, Fulgham or something. He scored the touchdown. But
Travis Fulgham.
You can't trust any of these guys. You can safely drop Ward and not worry. I know a lot of people are probably picking up Ward thinking that, you know, he's the only healthy wide receiver. Wentz isn't interested. And he's also not interested in John Hightower, the rookie. Not much.
Catches. Which was surprising. Hightower led the wide receivers in snaps last week. But again, he just only had two receptions this week, or two targets this week. So not great. Ward, it's interesting. But yes, he led the team in wide receiver targets this week. I mean, he led the team in targets. Ertz had 5, Ward had 7. But San Francisco defense is tough. He couldn't turn it into much. He only had 38 yards. Next week, it doesn't get any easier. He's got Pittsburgh. Week after that, he's got Baltimore. So even if he's getting volume, unless he scores a touchdown, I don't see him being very efficient with the targets. If you're in a deeper league, you know, 14, 12 teams with deeper benches, that kind of thing, I can see holding on to him if you need a bye week filler or, you know, you have injuries. But yeah, Ward is not going to be... The Eagles' offense in general is not great. They won the game because of Nick Mullins and that awful, awful interception he threw.
That's right.
But... yep. Nick Mullins just saw his career go up in smoke with that pick six. That was probably the worst interception I've ever seen.
Yep. Okay.
All right. Well, my drop for this week is going to be AJ Green. He was being drafted as a low wide receiver 2, high wide receiver 3 in drafts, and he's been terrible. Super inefficient with his targets. This week he bottomed out. He had 5 targets, 1 reception, 3 yards. T. Higgins looks like he's passed him up on the depth chart. T. Higgins was second on team receptions behind Tyler Boyd, and Green just doesn't look like himself. He looks slow, doesn't have that connection with Burrow yet, and he's really not worth starting for sure.
You can hold him, but
Green is enough of a name where you're playing a little bit of the waiver wire game too, right? You can send a landmine out to the waiver wire, hope somebody uses their priority or their budget on AJ Green, and see who you can snap up in the meantime. But yeah, Green, even in a good an offense as that's been passing as much as the Bengals, not doing much, not worth having on your team right now.
Yeah, the old trusty guys are just not as trusty anymore. Like Larry Fitzgerald. Larry Fitzgerald is even beyond his heyday, and so AJ Green's seen his heyday, and it's like it's AJ Green and like what we were saying about Emmanuel Sanders. You know, like these guys are starting to fall off the wayside, and you know it's like Demaryius Thomas. You know, like Demaryius Thomas's his day has come and gone, and I think we're kind of starting to see that with Green now. He's getting passed by these younger guys. Except John Ross. John Ross is off.
John Ross is he's gone.
He's gone. But AJ Green is starting to fall in that way. But not in the same way. But you're starting to see the older set guys, the veterans, starting to give way to these young bucks. So yeah, it's not good. And you can even see that. Even Amari Cooper, like he had a good game, but CeeDee Lamb. These young bucks, they're coming in there and they're saying we're here.
Well, speaking of, I guess young receivers, we have a couple ready to go in our spec ads. Why don't you go first?
Yeah, Darius Shepherd playing tonight. If Devontae Adams is out, then you got a good desperation play here, Darius Shepherd. In fact, I'm starting him in Scott Fishbowl because I have Devontae Adams, and I picked him up during the week because I wasn't sure if Adams was going to play. It was actually because of Lazard, and there's only MVS So the only two guys tonight, if you could, I think the game's already started, of course, but Darius Shepherd, I look for him to have a good game. We'll see if this spec ad works out right, but I don't think he'd be a spec ad if he does well. But so this is kind of an odd spec ad to give, because if Darius Shepherd does well, then that's great. But if Darius Shepherd doesn't do well, then it's, you know, people will be racing to the waiver wire, or I look stupid.
Well, I mean, if he does well, then maybe people chalk it up to, oh, you know, no Adams, no Lazard. So if Adams comes back next week, which he should, maybe he still goes a little bit under the wire because people assume it's a one-week thing. So you still sneak under there and grab him.
I suppose.
Hopefully.
Yeah. But it's kind of an odd one because of the game being played as we speak. But I try to pick spec as that are people like. I think we talked about this last week, is that when you pick over the bones after waivers are done.
Yeah, that is fun to do. My spec ad for the week is going to be Gabriel Davis, wide receiver for the Bills. I mean, he's not starting just yet. He's the fourth receiver on the depth chart behind Stephon Diggs, John Brown, Cole Beasley. But the Bills have run a few four wide receiver sets, which not shocking considering how well the offense has moved early in the season. But Davis is definitely reaping the benefits to Josh Allen's incredible start. It's fourth round pick. He scored a touchdown in two of his last three games. And he looks like a solid deep threat, averaging 16 yards a target, which is good for second in the league behind Justin Jefferson, another one of those young receivers.
Yep.
If anybody, you know, Beasley, Brown, Diggs, and Diggs hasn't exactly been a picture of health in his career, if one of those guys gets hurt, I think Davis is a very solid kind of backup bench stash just to see what happens, just based purely because Josh Allen's throwing the ball so well.
Yeah, and not only that, John Brown had a calf injury, and so in a way, he's kind of like you can stash him for the purposes of kind of like a wide receiver cuff in a way. So because Josh Allen is going to be passing, so if any receiver goes down, it doesn't matter from Beasley to Brown or even Diggs. So it's kind of good to their offense. Is conducive to actually having a guy like Gabriel Davis. I agree, it's a great pick. Great spec.
Hooray! I'm not great. My spec ads have not had a good track record so far this season, so we'll see what happens.
I like it.
Well, that finishes it up for us as we move into the close to the fourth quarter of the Chiefs-Pats game here. Richard, do you have any final thoughts for the week as week four finishes and week five is about to begin?
Yes, I do. If there's any COVID problems this week, be prepared for the league to take drastic action, because I was actually very concerned that they were actually going to shut down week four. I think a lot of people were thinking that. I mean, we were thinking the worst after the Saints. So these things are going to come up. So again, just stay strong. We're moving forward, and good luck in week five. Just keep thinking positive.
Nah, no better way to end the show than that. Keep thinking positive. Again, everybody, thank you for listening. Jonathan Chan with Richard Seville, as always. Kevin will probably be back next week, and we'll talk to you all then. Thanks for listening.